This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, September 2nd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Space 519, a unique shopping experience on Chicago's Gold Coast, has expanded to the suburbs. We'll learn more in our next segment, but first, Friday's big government jobs report for August caps off a busy week of data on Wall Street. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And this is Jobs Week. The private payrolls report comes out on Wednesday. The government jobs report comes out on Friday. And after a month of controversy over how the unemployment statistics are compiled, what can we expect this week when the government and ADP conduct their counts of how many new jobs were created in the month of August?
Yeah, I think whether we're looking at ADP or whether we're looking at the official government report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, we're going to see job growth of around 75,000 over the month. That's a solid number. It's a little bit better than what we've seen in recent numbers. May and June in particular were pretty soft. And then we also expect to see a slight increase in the unemployment rate from 4.2% in July to 4.3% in August. A little bit higher, but still historically low.
And this is going to be a double-barreled employment action this week because of the Labor Day holiday. The ADP number, which usually comes out on Wednesday, comes out on Thursday, which is the same day that jobless claims come out. And that's a number worth watching just to see how many continuing claims are filed this week.
That's right. So even though the job market has softened and we've been seeing slower job growth, we don't see a lot of people filing for unemployment insurance every week. You know, it's been running about 225,000, 230,000. What we are seeing is that the number of people who are getting unemployment in total, that's moving up, which indicates that it's taking longer for people who have lost a job to find a job. So we're still seeing low layoffs in the economy, but hiring has slowed significantly. And that's why we're seeing weaker job growth in the U.S. in 2025 compared to what we've had over the past few years.
Now, today we have reads on manufacturing and on construction spending. And what did we learn today?
Construction spending is still weak. We continue to see softness in housing construction in particular because of high mortgage rates. And then we're also seeing a decline in government construction. And then in manufacturing, the numbers were a little bit better, but they still showed a contraction. Manufacturing activity in the United States has been weak in 2025. It's contracting, and there's no indication yet that the tariffs are leading to a rebound in manufacturing output in the U.S.
Now, when it comes to the federal jobs number on Friday, it's the consensus view is 75,000 for the month of August. And if that comes in either on the money or slightly below expectations, does that tee up the interest rate cut later this month?
Yes, I think it's very likely that we will see the Federal Reserve cut that Fed funds rate by a quarter of a percentage point. That's what Chair Powell indicated last week at Jackson Hole. Monetary policy, what the Fed is keeping interest rates at, that's actually a slight negative for economic growth right now. And so given recent softer job numbers, I would expect to see the Fed cut not just in September, but further through the rest of 2025.
And then very quickly, if the Fed does cut rates this month, even by a quarter point or a half a percentage point, even though that would be kind of a surprise, would the bond market follow suit? Because I think everybody, you obviously want to pay less interest if you're carrying a balance as opposed to more. But would the bond market follow along, or would the 10-year yield go up as the federal funds rate goes down?
I think that, first of all, the Fed funds rate is an overnight rate, so it has very little impact on what's going on with the 10-year yield, which is much more in tune with inflation and growth expectations. I would expect that long-term yields are going to remain elevated because of high budget deficits and concern about inflation.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, a Gold Coast shopping experience is now available on the North Shore.
Cash, credit,
debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Space 519, Chicago's curated fashion and cafe concept store on Chestnut Street, is expanding with an additional location in the historic Plaza del Lago in Wilmette. We're joined by Lance Lawson, who is the co-owner of Space 519. Lance, thank you for joining us today. Now, first off, before we talk about the secret of Space 519 success, what is the significance of the number 519?
So our store opened about 15 years ago in the Bloomingdale's building, or the 900 shops. And in our first location, we were literally space 519 in the center. So we wanted to kind of use a generic name for the space that we could then fill with all kinds of different things. We did then relocate in 2018 to our current location at 200 East Chestnut Street, and we added the food concessions at that time as well.
And it seems like, and with all apologies to Taylor Swift, Lance, it seems like the name and the concept are built on the idea of a blank space, and then you can fill it however you see fit.
Exactly. Almost like a gallery type concept. We had owned a group of retail stores in the aughts that were called Jake that primarily focused on women's designer clothing. And when we were traveling so much around the world to do that buying, we found that there were many things in different categories like home, fancy food, that we were interested in. So we were excited to kind of bring everything into one space. And we operate kind of like a small department store, much kind of like what Barney's used to do formerly, where you can buy everything here from like a designer dress from Europe down to our favorite hot sauce from Santa Fe. It's a wide array of products.
Now, we talk about this as a very new idea, but in many ways, this playbook, the one that you're following, and you acknowledge it too, that the playbook in many ways was established by Herman Kogan in the book Give the Lady What She Wants about Marshall Fields. There is just an awful lot of the old Marshall Fields ethos on display here.
You bet. We're shamelessly old-fashioned and huge admirers of Marshall Fields. That, you know, many concessions, the Walnut Room being one of them, where it was one of the first places that women could have lunch in the city, you know, way back in the day at the original Marshall Fields. We bring a lot of that concept with the lunchroom. And also, you know, the use of cosmetics kind of on the first floor was a Marshall Fields innovation. We do a lot of apothecary when you first enter our store, which allows everyone to participate at an entry price level. So yes, we're huge admirers of Marshall Fields and really a lot of the old fashioned brick and mortar retailing, which is kind of interestingly coming very much back into vogue. We're finding, you know, customers are very fatigued with all the returns that you have to do through online purchasing and are really leaning back into coming into a store where you can do something as novel as actually try on the clothes you're going to buy. There might be someone who's going to help you with alterations. We do complimentary gift wrapping with real wrapping paper and ribbon, you know, things that are very tactile and are much more of an experience that you're never going to be able to replicate on a website.
And it also seems the way that the experiential side of shopping, the way that makes it special compared to just staring at your screen or staring at your phone, is that, you know, there are sometimes you go into an old department store or a retail store that's been around for a long time, and they're just wheezing through the 21st century, just trying to make it to the next day. And you walk out and go, that was a real depressing experience. And
for sure.
And you don't go back as a result. But if it's vibrant and you do have all the other little things, the gift wrapping station, the cafe, the person playing the piano, do you have a person playing the piano? That kind of thing. You want to go back.
Yeah, we have a great list that's on Spotify for music, but no piano player. But I totally agree with you. You know, and people marvel, especially retail partners come in from New York. They go into the department stores on Michigan Avenue, and then they walk in here, and they're like, wow, this place is so alive. Because we deliberately have our restaurant in the center of both of our locations. So that right now I'm sitting in my office, but through the door I can hear the buzz and the clinks. And it creates an energy for the entire space that's kind of sorely lacking. And what we do very differently than the current department stores, in my opinion, is we're very curated. So you're not going to see the same ubiquitous stuff that you see on every shopping website or at every department store. We're really tightening up our assortment. So if you like our perspective, you're going to enjoy the edit as well.
Lance Lawson, co-owner of Space 519. Check them out on the Gold Coast and now in Wilmette. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, key stories today in fast food and the coffee space.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
On the restaurant front, McDonald's is expanding value meals to lure budget-conscious customers, while Starbucks posts a sales record fueled by pumpkin spice and underscoring shifting consumer habits. We welcome in RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thank you for joining us today. I want to start by talking about Starbucks and rolling out the entire fall product line, because even though people were getting their last minute summer vacations in, you're still wearing shorts. In some spots, the pool is still open. But as far as Starbucks and I think some other coffee companies are concerned, it's autumn. It is time for pumpkin spice everything. And we joke about it, but Starbucks is having the last laugh.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Rob. It's been a powerful motivator to get people in the stores, the pumpkin spice latte, which has been one of the most successful limited time products Starbucks has rolled out, and frankly, one of the most successful products across the industry. You're right, it may seem a little early. You're right, we're just finishing up summer vacation, and it may seem a little bit early, but it does drive people to stores. Our visitation data supports that. And it really can be something that can be really effective for multiple weeks now, too. I think they've extended the calendar. It's one that's it's here to stay. It's not going anywhere anytime soon.
This is a promotion that also has managed to break containment, at least as far as social media is concerned, where instead of the company trying to build buzz online, just the general public is they elect to build buzz for Starbucks, because the moment the calendar rolls over to September 1st, I see this on my social media feeds, and I'm sure you do as well. People really lean into the fact that spooky season, if you want to call it that, starts on September 1st. The number on the thermometer be darned.
Yeah, I think you're right. You're exactly right about Starbucks and the user-driven marketing content as well. I think that's become a powerful driver. It's not just the company themselves doing it, but social media has become a big part of this. And, you know, you and I have talked about innovative ways for this change the market in the past. And I think this is just one of those things that there's a tremendous amount of consumer response for it and continues to drive not only that social media, but it really does a good job bringing people into the store.
McDonald's will expand their value menu once again. The extra value meals are back. This was something that was last rolled out on the menu before the COVID-19 pandemic. And this seems to be McDonald's marketing directly to lower income customers who are very budget conscious, especially these days.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, if nothing else, our data shows is that consumers in this day and age, particularly lower and even I would say middle income consumers, are extremely price sensitive. After years of inflation, not only in food, but also in rent and healthcare and other staples categories, we remain with a very value-sensitive consumer. And we see it with our data because we see a lot of cross-visitation to dollar stores and to value grocery chains for McDonald's customers. And so I think this is a way for them potentially to recapture some of that and bring people in for these value messages or these value meals. It's across the menu. It's not just one or two things. There's a lot of variety with it. So that's going to expand the potential reach with this promotion. So it's probably not they're probably not going to be the only one. Now that we're kind of getting a little bit more clarity about the impact of tariffs, I think a lot more QSR and fast food chains are going to be a little bit more aggressive with pricing, potentially compete with McDonald's. So expect a lot of price-driven promotions in the back half of the year.
What's interesting is that the company says it will subsidize some of the franchisees who lose money on this particular promotion. And I would imagine, though, from McDonald's perspective, even if it has the potential to be a money loser for them, a dollar spent at McDonald's on a money-losing product is a dollar that is not spent elsewhere.
That's exactly right. And the key for this is going to be, can they drive repeat visits? And I like the layering with the promotion, the fact that they've got an initial run of things that will be on the extra value menu, but then also having other things that will be introduced as part of the menu as the year goes on. That seems to me a great way to build that repeat visit, because, again, if you're going to lose money on that initial transaction to get people in the door, you've got to have a game plan to bring them back repeatedly. And I think that's what the company's thinking about with the plan here.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets are lower. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is J.J. Kinahan, founder of IG North, former CEO of IG North America in Chicago. J.J., thank you for joining us today. Now, historically, September is a pretty rough month for stocks. So the performance we're seeing today, is this simply a function of investors waking up, rolling over, looking at the calendar and saying, it's September 2nd, I got to sell, baby?
Well, I think maybe that's part of it. Certainly it's living up to its billing, if you will. And the other part of it is, again, we're right off all-time highs. And I think, you know, in some ways, this has been the best period from Memorial Day to Labor Day in 40 years. And so I think we've gotten a little bit spoiled, if I'm going to be honest, this summer, in terms of many just expect us to go up every single day. So occasionally you do sell off, and it's actually healthy for the markets overall when we have a little bit of a sell off at times.
Yeah. What happened to the people who followed the old adage of sell in May and go away? How do they feel if they're coming back right now?
Yeah, they may want to stay away, or their financial situation has forced them to stay away, Rob.
Now, we do have some big numbers this week, two reads on the job market, starting with the private payroll report coming out on Thursday, and then the government jobs report on Friday, both of which pivotal figures in whether or not the Fed decides to walk through that open door and cut interest rates later this month. And if they do have a green light to cut, if the Fed does, what does that mean in general for the overall economy? If you cut a quarter point or cut a half a percent, what does that mean for just the average person holding debt?
Well, for the average person holding debt, it's probably a good thing, because that would assume that you have the opportunity for rates to be lower on money or you are currently borrowing, or to refinance, or, you know, readjust your rates in some way, shape, or form. Now, I think a half point would take the market by a bit of surprise, so that may not get a great reaction. You have to remember, you cut rates when you think that, you know, money is a little bit tight and you need to pump money into the system. Well, we're coming off many years where we had a lot of money pumped into the system. With that said, you have, as of right now, more than a 90% probability, based on, you know, the FedWatch tool at the CME, that we will see at least a 25 basis point rate cut at the next meeting. It was 78% about a week and a half ago. So my personal history tells me when you see more than a 75% probability, it usually happens overall. The Fed doesn't like to spook the market one way or the other. And what we're also, you know, as you just mentioned, particularly that jobs report on Friday, I think will be heavily watched to make sure that, you know, it isn't a surprise in terms of more people being employed than we think, which would put more pressure to not cut rates.
There was some action on the tariff front on, well, let's talk about that next. But first, let's talk about Kraft Heinz. This has been something that has been discussed quite a bit, that Kraft and Heinz would separate into two separate businesses. What is the play for them? And also, what is this going to mean for real estate on Waukegan Road?
Well, on the real estate on Waukegan Road is a little bit harder for me to, you know, speculate about. But what I will say is this merger is one that, you know, again, just hasn't worked out since the very beginning. Just to put it in perspective, since the time of this merger, we have seen that stock go down over 50%. Meanwhile, we've seen the S&P 500 up over 200%. I think that tells you all you need to know about that merger. You know, I saw Warren Buffett this morning called this disappointing. He was truly one of the driving forces behind this happening overall. We see the market down another 7% today on this news, which normally isn't great. You know, when you see news like this, a lot of times it's met with a sense of relief by the market. So a lot more to come. You know, again, the two companies were forced together culturally or whatever else. It didn't seem to work. So we'll see how the uncoupling goes also as they become private companies.
J.J. Kinahan, former CEO of IG North America in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, turning your Christmas holiday into a memorable vacation.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Pre-Flight Airport Parking. Today, we're looking at ditching the traditional stay-at-home Christmas and planning a big family trip for the holiday. Here with some tips and destinations to consider is Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com based in Chicago. Cindy, thank you for joining us today. And you have a list of some, you know, conversation starters, some ideas to kind of get those wheels turning in your mind about where to go and what to do if you don't want to spend Christmas at home. And I really like this one, Cindy. Chicago. Go to the Chris Kindle Market and go to Zoo Lights. That seems really easy to me.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, but if you stay in a hotel downtown, then it makes it special, right? You're not at home looking around going, oh, I should clean that, or, you know, I should do something else around the house. It's about making it special, right? So if you want to stay in Chicago, you don't want to buy a plane ticket, which we'll talk about in a minute because they're very expensive these days. Then you can just book a hotel and you can walk to all these great things, because there are few things that are more beautiful, I think, than Chicago at Christmas. But there are a lot of other places, right? New York City is it. You got the Rockettes, you've got ice skating. It's a beautiful, magical place at Christmas. You know, I think the sort of, dream magic or the dream Christmas trip is the European Christmas markets. And the best way to do that is with a river cruise. And then you get to go to a whole succession of beautiful old cities in Europe that have these amazing Christmas markets. You can get all your shopping done if you go ahead of time, or if you wait and go closer to Christmas, you can just buy things for yourself, which is its own kind of joy, right?
Now, this is where we're talking about popular destinations at peak times. Are there some hints or tricks to getting a better price on going to some of these destinations?
Well, I think, you know, the key really now is flights. I just booked some November plane tickets to France, and they're very expensive. What was interesting was, especially if you want like a premium cabin, an upgraded experience, so you're not, you know, crammed into the middle seat for 8 or 10 hours trying to get to Europe, those seats are a little more affordable. But what you want to do is decide where you want to go and then book, you know, set a Google Flights alert, and they'll tell you, they'll track prices for you, and they'll tell you when they start to go down or when they start to go up. And then you just have to be there and be ready to jump on it when you see a change in the price. Either it's, you know, it drops and you're like, I got to book it now, or you see it start to creep up and you're go, I better book it before it gets higher. And, you know, if you don't really know where you want to go, or you just, you're just, I got to get away, then there's a thing called Google Flights Explore, and it will look at, it'll compare prices for tickets from your home airport. So you could set O'Hare or Midway or, you know, Milwaukee, whatever your home airport is. And it will just tell you, here's the cheapest place to go. And, you know, the reality is, I think at Christmas, there's something special pretty much anywhere that you go. But if it's going to tell you, here's a cheap flight, and you look and go, oh, you know what? I always wanted to see Santa Fe at Christmas. I hear they do some beautiful things there, and it is gorgeous. They have some lovely desert experiences in Santa Fe, New Mexico at Christmas time. So, you know, it might be one that was never even on your radar, but because there was a reasonable flight, a reasonably priced flight, you got to experience someplace new.
And also, you don't necessarily have to be in a particular destination before or during the Christmas holiday. Could you potentially save some money by leaving on December 26th or 7th?
You know what? That's the secret to flying. It's actually not December 26th or 7th. It's December 25th. The cheapest day to fly on any of the big holidays, this falls for Christmas and for Thanksgiving, is always to travel on that day. You know, if you're an early riser and you don't mind an early morning flight, you could get on the plane on Christmas morning and you could be in your destination and still have Christmas dinner when you arrive. And you will find that, you paid a lot less than the people who flew on Christmas Eve so that they could get there on Christmas morning.
And I can personally vouch for being on the first flight out on New Year's Day. That is also that's another day in which you can save some money if you want to take a winter family vacation.
Absolutely. And I bet you had the plane practically to yourself.
Yes, we did. And I had three young kids. We weren't staying up until midnight. Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief, SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time for tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, an update on the apartment market in downtown Chicago.
It's an economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Downtown apartment rents continue to climb as limited new construction, high costs, and strong demand squeeze supply, pushing vacancy rates to decade lows. We welcome in Rachel Herzog, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Rachel, thank you for joining us today. And what a difference 5 years makes, because in 2020, when all Loop office buildings essentially shut down and transformed to work from home operation, there was a lot of discussion here and elsewhere about whether or not the downtown apartment market would ever come back. And it has, and then some.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we're definitely seeing, even with the persistence of remote work, a lot of people, you know, moving to Chicago for work relocations. We also see people, you know, renting for longer because they're putting off home buying, which also increases rental demand in the downtown market.
A tenant could pay nearly $2,800 for an average one-bedroom apartment downtown. And for our purposes, what qualifies as a downtown apartment? Is it anything between Roosevelt and Division, or is that geographic area a little smaller?
It includes the Loop, the South Loop, West Loop, Fulton Market, River North, and the near north side. So the whole downtown and Byron's.
And then, so this also lends some credence then to the plans to convert a lot of the old office buildings in the LaSalle Street Financial Canyon into apartment buildings, because the demand definitely is there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think that will definitely add some supply to the market, but those projects won't be done for the next couple of years. So we're seeing a very limited apartment supply right now.
And then based on your conversation with developers and landlords, are people just merely looking for an apartment with a downtown address, or are they pretty choosy about the age of the building or particular amenities?
I think it depends. I think you've got young professionals that are maybe new to the city and want all the amenities. You see people drawn to neighborhoods like the West Loop and River North for just kind of the nightlife, the restaurants, the whole scene. So it really depends on the neighborhood and the type of person.
And then also with this clear demand for downtown apartment buildings, we talked about how work from home is still a fact of life for a lot of the office buildings, and some of the businesses that catered to the office workers went away in 2020 and never really came back. But the fact that you now have downtown Chicago, it's a very vibrant neighborhood that people want to live and people clearly want to move into. That changes the nature of Loop businesses. You don't necessarily have to serve the lunchtime crowd anymore, but you absolutely have to have a place for dinner.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, more people living downtown really helps the retail environment, since you're not just getting people in for fast casual lunch restaurants that you might not see as much, but you're seeing, you know, maybe people going to grocery stores and coffee shops just kind of all hours of the day, right?
And then very quickly, how does this change the dynamic for developers, too? If you know your building is going to be occupied, if you know you're going to collect rent, even though we're talking about projects that may be a few years or even a decade down the line, do you decide to plant your flag in whatever available land is left in downtown Chicago?
There's a lot of downtown apartment buildings that are up for sale right now with, investors maybe thinking they can get a good price on it, just given, you know, institutional investors seeing these really strong rent growth numbers. So it's something that, you know, might cause investors to kind of take a second look at Chicago if they hadn't considered it before.
Rachel Herzog, reporter, Crane Chicago Business. Thank you for joining us today.